Good morning and welcome to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dilger.
Happy to have you along. I hope you are somewhere warm with hot chocolate or coffee if you're in Indiana. The show does air all over the country, so it could be nice if you're in the Phoenix area or somewhere else. But anyhow, welcome to the show, Ken. We've got a lot of things to talk about today. If you're new to the show, we talk in the form of five different conversations. Most stations get four of the five. If you've missed one, don't forget to get signed up for our podcast. We do send out extra things every now and then during the week. It is Consider This Program. If you put in my name in the internet, it will take you to a podcast called Consider This with Big Joe Clark. That has to be shut down because of the way technology that we have with iTunes. So it's Consider This Program. Please get signed up. Now, Ken, as you know, we talk about the three phases of finance, or the three stages, the accumulation phase, the preservation phase, and the distribution phase. So I try to break these conversations down so that they help all people at different walks of their life. We're going to do something funny today on one of the conversations, and that is attack a post on Facebook. I try to stay out of it. I try not to turn it on. I tell people happy birthday. And, you know, I'm usually off, you know, check and make sure that, you know, the kids are behaving and so forth. And I couldn't help myself. Somebody said some craziness about 401ks and IRAs and annuities all in one little. And my head almost exploded. I couldn't stop typing. And then I got a lot of responses back. So I promised we'd do a segment for the site. But we're going to talk about the game of Risk. I don't know if did you play that as a kid growing up?
Of course, love that game.
Love fortifying. My brother and I were very, very, very good at it. So we're going to talk about the game of Risk, what you need to fortify. We're going to talk about the only time that average matters and really go through those phases of finance in depth. I've been asked to write a book on those three. So we're pondering that right now. Whether it happens or not, I don't know. We're going to talk about getting to know your beneficiaries. I had another question. If I'm going to give money away, how should I do it? What kind should it be? We're going to talk about distribution in the candy wrapper model, and that's the Facebook post. And then we'll sum it up with what you learned or what you should have learned, what you know now that you didn't know before, and hopefully how you feel and some things that you can act upon. I will invite you. We're having another series of critical decisions that will impact your retirement. If you're interested in that or would like to be on the invite list, feel free to shoot us an email. Consider this at yourlifeafterwork.com or just go to the website, yourlifeafterwork.com. With that said, Ken and I will take a break. We will get right back into the show. Don't forget, yourlifeafterwork.com. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Ken Dilger, co-host of Consider This with Joe Clark. Joe is a certified financial planner and former professor at Purdue University. Joe is the managing partner for the Financial Enhancement Group, and Joe's passion is teaching people about their money so they don't make inefficient financial decisions. Find out more at yourlifeafterwork.com. Financial Enhancement Group manages more than $390 million for families in 31 states. Join Joe and me as we address your questions about money and five critical elements of finance: retirement planning, tax planning, investment planning, life happens, the good, the bad, and the ugly of life, and legacy planning. Each week, we will tackle questions that can make a difference in your life. Financial Enhancement Group can be reached at 1-800-928-4001. Financial Enhancement Group is an SEC registered investment advisor. Securities offered through World Equity Group, Inc., member FINRA, SBIC. You can find out more at our website, yourlifeafterwork.com.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
We're happy to have you along, Ken. Glad you're here, you know. It's a beautiful time of the year. Hey, when you were a young man, so you got out of college, you played over in Illinois, right?
Yep.
And got out of college, and your life's a little bit different because of the NFL, so maybe we shouldn't use you as an example. But let's pretend like we're just normal people. You know, I knew money, and you had football, so you had people watching out for you from the very beginning. So do you suppose a 22-year-old who's not married and has no kids should buy a life insurance policy or a disability policy?
I would think probably a disability policy.
How's come?
Because at that age, you're probably more prevalent to get disabled due to an accident or a disease than die, maybe?
That's one maybe why. You have the right answer.
Okay, well, good.
Let's get to
that portion right, Joe.
Let's get to the reasoning, though. And the answer all comes down to money, right? Life insurance is sold. Disability policies are bought, right? At 21 years old, you don't owe anybody anything, right? America is not a place where you can put your parents in debt. Now, sometimes parents can get sued if you screw up as a kid, right? But if you got a car loan and you die, your parents are not obligated to pay it off. If you happen to have any assets, they'll pay it off, right? Same thing for a house. Same thing for credit cards. Nobody else is obligated but you. But your one biggest risk, so we're playing risk, and I never could say that one island off the side, Kamchatka, or whatever it was, but my brother and I always wanted that place because it seemed to be the key, right? And when you had that and you wanted to fortify it, you wanted to protect it. At 21, what you really need to protect is your income.
Correct.
Right? So here's and I'm a checklist nut. So here's what I want you to think about in risk. And we're going to pretend that I'm 20 years younger than I am, because at that point in time, I still had a Harley. Right. And this is how I used to teach my students at Purdue. I was an adjunct professor at Purdue for 7 years, where I taught financial planning. And the example that I used, it was a rainy day, not real rainy, just wet. It was fall. So there's leaves that are on the ground, probably the most dangerous surface that motorcycle riders ride in. I've probably have three friends that I know that have died for doing something so stupid. Right. And I've got a mother who loves me, who hates my Harley Davidson motorcycle, right? She just goes nuts. And so it's now Saturday morning. It's our usual riding time. And we're thinking about getting up and going out. And when I look out the window and I see the leaves on the road and I see the wet water that's come down over nightfall, I have my choice, Ken, to do four things.
Stay in bed,
which would be a definition of avoiding risk. Mm-hmm. Right. I flat out make my mama happy and say, you know, I'm going to stay in and watch Fred Flintstones, eat Lucky Charms, and not get out on the bike. What else could I do?
Wear your helmet.
I could wear my helmet. That's called reducing risk. Right. I could do things that reduce the risk. I could try to stay away from the leaves on the ground, you know, and swerve between them, because the wet pavement's no big deal on the motorcycle tires, really. I could do those kind of things to avoid it. What's something else I could do? I could say, heck with it, Ken. I'm going riding, right? It's Saturday morning.
True.
It's 9 o'clock, and I can just open up the garage door, and me and the bike are off out in the world. So I can retain the risk, right, by going and doing it. I can avoid it by staying in bed. I can reduce it by putting on a helmet. There's only one other thing that I can do in risk, right?
And insure it.
You can transfer the risk. You can insure it. And that's what your real job is when you're in what we call that accumulation phase. It really is your job to try to go through your list and see where your weaknesses are. What part of your life needs to be fortified, if you will. And one of the reasons at the Financial Enhancement Group, with the families we work with, we have a family bundling and a beneficiary program, so that if I took care of Ken and Ken qualifies to be one of our families that we take care of, by definition, we take care of people who don't want to worry about their money, right? But if we agreed to take care of Ken, we're also going to agree to take care of his son and daughter. And the reason we do that is there's two different types of people that are in the financial services world for the most part. There are the people who are there's two different types of families. There are people who are affluent. So now you're 25 years old. You've still got no kids. You're still not married. You may have a house. You may not have a house. You've got a reasonably good income, but you like to eat at Morton's, right? So you've got affluence. You make a lot of money, but you don't have a lot of assets, right? And then you've got the people that are 50 years old or 55 or 60 years old that now have a bundle of assets, but may not have a big income. Those are wealthy, right? So when you go into my space, and this is what becomes very, very complicated for people to get, the people who sell products, insurance policies, annuities are a little bit different, but certainly on the life insurance side and insurance policies, tend to work with your daughter, right? Affluent people, because they've got income to be able to pay premiums, right? And so their advice tends to be given by people who only have a hammer, right? I mean, seriously, if your only tool is a hammer, amazingly enough, life looks like a nail, right? And it just tends to be. And I will have people come in who have bought life insurance policies for college education so that they would be able to have money to loan against buying other rental property. I mean, I've heard some pretty creative things that exist where people have used that risk and have thought they covered a risk with a simultaneous benefit and were totally mistaken. Almost everybody who's in the industry of managing money, who's acting as a fiduciary, and remember, that means by law at the Financial Enhancement Group, we have to treat your money as if it were our money and we were in the same situation. Almost everybody, by definition, is a registered investment advisor. And you need to ask that question, are you a fiduciary? And they have to answer it legally. If not, they've opened themselves up to quite a bit of legal regulation as well as lawsuits that are out there. Are you a fiduciary is a question that you ought to ask anybody that you're working with. So our solution, so that we make sure that your daughter's not misled or misguided, is to wrap it together. So if Ken's fee is lower because of his asset base, his kids get to come in at the same rate. And they may not want to talk to me or anybody on my team with a whiteboard, but they have access to our video library. And they may not want to ask you, Dad, should I put money in a Roth 401k or should I put money in a Roth IRA? Your answer is going to be, well, call Joe. The answer is, hey, there's a video link that we can send you where that's already explained and already done. That's our solution. But when you're younger and you're out there in the world, the one thing you want to make sure that you really don't do is buy a bunch of risk coverage that you don't need. And you want to take those dollars and make sure that you apply them in areas that get you the biggest bang for your buck. That is typically disability income until kids are born. Right. And if you're going to go buy life insurance, I am still a huge fan of term insurance. I have a 10-year level term policy on my life. Every 3 years, I go and take a physical. They pay for it. It's a beautiful thing. And believe me, they really care if I'm going to die. So it's a good physical, right? Mm-hmm. And I redo the term insurance for another 10 years. If something happens to be wrong with me at the end of 10 years, I still have the coverage. It just means the premium goes up every year. So if I was doing it, I would be looking at the 10-year level term. That's one of the things. If I had to buy life insurance, but I would be paying attention to disability. And as long as the Roth IRA occurs, for the extreme majority of you that are listening to us, life insurance is not the best savings mechanism. It just simply isn't. Great tax codes, I'll give you that, but I think there are better alternatives. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dilger. You got a question or comment, shoot us an email, considerthis@yourlifeafterwork.com. We'll take a break and be right back. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
Ken, this is what I would believe to be an obvious question for somebody of your life where you played in the NFL. Are there some years of your life that are going to be more income productive than others?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. I mean, there's just not a lot of things out there that are kind of like, you know, the NFL. Just that I love the average wage. I'm glad I don't have to pay it, right? That's yeah. The only thing that I'm thinking. Here's the deal. Don't take any snaps. Stay in the style. Never mind. Just sidekick. I'll get off that for a second. When you look at your life, And I'm going to give you the genesis of this, but there's a part of time where averages matter, and there's a part of time where averages don't matter. And as we've talked about this before, Ken, about the double curse of knowledge, and I don't know if you remember that phraseology or not, but it's the best thing that I got about from Purdue University, other than four great people that are on my team that were my students, nothing like cherry picking, right?
There you go, yes.
But starting over 14 semesters, I never knew how difficult that really would be. So the double curse of knowledge, and you need to understand this as a listener, because if you're not working with a fiduciary, if you're working with a stockbroker or an insurance agent or somebody who sells stuff, believe me, in the relationship, you are the fiduciary. Okay? And if you're doing this on your own, you need to understand the obligations that you're under as a fiduciary, if you will. So the double curse of knowledge is I don't know what I don't know. And in my world, things change all the time. Markets go up and down. Tax codes change. different products are created because of technology that didn't exist before, right? You've got you've got all of that working, if you will. I don't know what I don't know. But worse yet, I don't know what Ken doesn't know. I don't know what you don't know. So when I'm putting this show together, it is very easy for me to have a belief that you know things that you really don't know. Right? There is a presumption. And what we find in all things, but my study is behavioral finance, what we find is the more you study something, the worst you are at explaining it to somebody else because you have a general assumption of what they know. So if you don't know Ken Dilger, Ken was a tight end for the Indianapolis Colts and then the Tampa Bay Bucks. So if I ask Ken right now to explain to me what he did when he went to the line and our dear friend went Omaha, Omaha, right, and the pigskin got snapped, I guarantee you that Ken could not explain it to you and I unless he really thought about it in a way that we would understand it. And keep in mind, I played football, just not at that level, right?
Correct.
There are so many things that were instinctive to him, intuitive to him, that he would presume everybody knew. And yet I will challenge you to say, I bet there are people that you played with, no names, that probably didn't understand exactly what you were doing because the brain power is not always equal among everybody.
True.
Right?
So true.
Yeah. So it's a different world, but you get the point, right?
Correct.
So you guys are out here, you're tooling down the road, and you're listening to this guy on the radio talking about taxes or talking about investing or talking about other stuff, and I'm doing my best, and it's really Ken's job to call me on it. I'm doing my best to make sure that I am not talking at a level that is beyond where you are. I want to make it meaningful and helpful, and I want you to get something out of
your
time.
Hard, Joe.
Well, so we're gonna try to make this as basic as we can. So I want you to think right now about an airplane. And I you know, most of us fly these days. Most of you that are listening have probably been on a plane. You know, so I go to the Indianapolis airport probably 40 times a year. And I go through security. We all know how that works, right? I get in there, I get on the plane, I sit down, and somebody comes and says, "Mr. Clark, would you like something to drink?" And you know, if they've got coffee made, I'll take a coffee, right? And then the plane takes off, and we finally get up a little bit higher, and now they come back and they give me more coffee. And eventually, fortunately for me, so far, every time I've landed safely. We've had a couple dumps, you know, where you've gone down and bumped and gone back up, and a couple airports that we had to reroute. But so far, everywhere I've been, I've made it. You can tell that because I'm talking, right? Most people don't survive plane crashes, right? The interesting part is I told one of my pilots that nothing changed on that airplane when I was on it. You know, from the time I got the first cup of coffee to the second cup of coffee and wound up somewhere else safe and dry, hopefully. And he proceeded to spend 2 hours explaining what I'm going to try to give you in the next 30 seconds. And that there are very clear key differences between when I got on the plane in the first time, when they got it to 30,000 feet, and when they went to land it. And when you hear him say that, it's kind of like, well, duh, that's obvious. Well, Ken, here's what's obvious to me. You know, you're 47, 48 years old. And you're looking at your statements when they come, and you're looking at them the same way you did when you were 25. And your dad, if he's looking at his statement, is going to look at it the same way that you are now. Son, here's how much I got.
True.
Right?
So true.
And you're going to look at your wife, and you're going to go, honey, here's what we got. And at 25, you go, wow, this is what I got, right? But we all looked at the bottom number, and we didn't break it apart from a tax standpoint. I think one of the things about my industry that's really misleading is we should never be allowed to send you a statement that combines your IRA money and your money that's after tax, which should never happen, right? Should never happen because they are really two different things. So in my industry, if you've got $2 million and it's all in an IRA, you're going to wind up with $1.4 million of it, but I'm still going to bill on $2 million. If you've got $2 million that you've already earned that's in a trust account that you've already paid taxes on, I'm going to still bill on $2 million, but that's really all your money, right? So big, big differences. So when you're first getting on that plane, what I want you to think about is accumulation. And your mission, Your job as the pilot, as the fiduciary of that ship, is to make sure that you are building the proper tax diversification. That means you're putting money in a Roth, money in, that's an account that's after tax, and money in a 401k that's probably tax deferred. Tax diversification. Doesn't matter as much up front, matters a whole lot over the rest of your journey. The second thing you're going to think about is, what is the average percentage of my income that I need to save? The younger you are, Ken, the less you have to save. You just got to do it consistently over the next 45 years and you'll be fine. When you get the plane to 30,000 feet, that's what I call preservation. And it may be when you're still putting money in. Ken's got a 401k at work. I've got a 401k at work. We're still putting money in. But what we've saved and accumulated already is a lot more than what we're adding. Right? It's a lot more than what it is that we're adding. And so preservation has one goal, and it is the only time, my friends, that average return matters. We're going to come back to that in a second. Eventually, you go to land the plane. That's what I've spent my 31-year career on, is the distribution phase. That's when you're landing the plane. You will exit your 401k plan, Ken. You either exit intentionally, or you exit, you're forced because the IRS forces you to do it, or your beneficiaries if you're not here to do it. But you are going to exit your 401k. It's what I call defined distribution as opposed to defined contribution. In that period of time, you're worried about the tax rate you pay on the average dollar. You notice there's a lot of taxes in this. Second is the volatility between distribution points. Now, understanding that average return is critical, especially when we talk about the volatility that's going on in the marketplace right now. You've got to be there beginning, middle, and end to get an average. You can't be jumping in and out, being wishy-washy, changing direction just because the market has a gust or two. So accumulation, preservation, distribution, know the phase of finance that you are in. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark along with Ken Dilger. Shoot us an email, considerthis@yourlifeafterwork.com. We'll be right back. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dilger.
Ken, I want you to imagine this because in your family, did your parents and you guys talk about money at all?
No, never. Okay.
Mine didn't either, but then again, we didn't have it, right? So it was more about how to keep the electricity on, you know, and those kind of things. So some families talk a lot about money. Some families talk a little about money. Some talk none at all, and it can really, really create some challenges. So I had an interesting call. We have a planning team. So I've got a director of financial planning, Aaron Rayum at the Financial Enhancement Group. And we've got six other planners that are across the country, four that are here in Indiana. And what we do is have a planning queue. So when somebody calls in and asks a question that is unique to that particular planner, they're not allowed to solve it without first checking to make sure that we already have a checklist. Right, because we don't want to have to reinvent the wheel every time. And secondly, we want to make sure that everybody provides the same answer. So, you know, when you hear people talk about they work in teams, it's usually brokers sharing commissions. So one of them can golf while the other one works, right?
I like that idea.
I like it too. You know, the 25 people that are here on our team, there's a good chance that all 25 of those people at one point in time had something to do with your financial journey and making it work, because we all have our own little niches, right? One of mine happens to be legacy planning. It's what got me into the industry. So I care a lot about, when Ken's gone, how his kids receive whatever's left, you know, with obviously his wife first, but you get the mission, the story. So here's the question, Ken, and we're going to solve it today on the radio. Your daughter, we're going to pretend, since you've got a daughter. I've got two daughters too. We could pretend it's mine, right? So we'll pretend it's my daughter. Okay. We pick on Ken's daughter all the time. And somehow or another, much to my dismay and lack of knowledge, as the dad told me, my daughter has accumulated $60,000 in student debt, right? Now, if you're new to the financial education world, that's going to sound like a lot of money. It is a lot of money. Make no bones. If you're 22 years old and you've got $60,000 worth of college debt, that is a lot of money. I won't try to lie to you and take that away. It's a whole brand new car, right? And so think about a whole new brand car payment going against your debt to credit ratio, or your debt to income ratio, rather, when you go to buy a house. But I've seen $300,000 and $400,000 worth of student debt that's out there for people that are in the medical world or other professional stuff. And it's just, it makes you want to pull your hair out. Here's his question. So my daughter's got this $60,000 loan. Now, Ken, she's going to pay it. But,
of course.
But I don't like her having the debt, number one. The credit, the debt-to-income ratio is messed up, so she can't buy a house, number two. And number three, the interest that she's paying is a lot less than what I'm earning on some of my investments. So, Ken, my question to you is, can I and should I pay off that $60,000 mortgage and let her make payments back to me? How does the tax work, and can I legally do it?
Well, Joe, that's a good question. Well, I know you can gift funds to your family
How
every
much?
Year. $15,000 mm-hmm. for a single person, $30,000 for a married couple.
Right.
Correct?
And if they're and if the recipient's married, I can do another $30,000.
Yeah.
Right. So the whole $60,000, if the daughter was married, right, and the dad was married, in both in cases they are, the whole $60,000 could be a gift. Okay, but I'm not giving her the money, right? She's got to pay this back.
So maybe you create a loan document spelling out how many years she gets to pay for it and how much interest she gets to pay.
And if I were going to do it, that's if you were going to do it via a loan and you wanted to really make a point, that's exactly how you would do it. Now, what interest rate can I charge her?
Probably up to 18%.
Well, then I might as well leave her at the bank, right?
I think there's probably a minimal interest rate you have to charge, right?
There's a thing called an AFR rate. It's published by the ARS. There's a short-term, mid-term, and long-term, and it tells you right on there, AFR rate, tells you exactly what it is you have to charge. And what Ken gave you is the precise answer in terms of what you have to do. The kids would pay the interest, and it'd be mortgage interest. Or no, this is student debt, sorry. And dad would have to pay taxes on the interest. They would get a 1099 and say, here's how much income interest I took. Now, the reality is because of the amount, the $60,000, on one hand, because they can make it as a gift and just say, honey, you owe me $250 a month, and it's going to go up $50 a month every year you get a year older until it's paid back, right? And here's the rate that I'm charging you. And obviously, it would be less than the rate that she's paying the bank, or she wouldn't be doing it, and probably more than the AFR rate for most people. Because we now have over $11 million that we can each gift away, right, that we can die with and it's not taxed up to 2025, 26, that's guaranteed to be there. Anything extra that you gave, the interest or anything else, truly doesn't matter. You over after the $60,000 was made as a gift, the rest of it just simply comes off of what I call your piggy bank or your unified credit amount. We typically expressed what's called an exemption equivalent, and it just comes off that. So it's not going to hurt anything. So the answer is yes, Dad, if you want to do this, you can do it. Should you? That's a family decision, right? But now we're back to Ken again. No, it's Joe's money. I forgot. So now Joe has to decide, okay, I'm going to give him the 60 grand.
Okay.
Now the question is, where is the 60 grand going to come from? So let's just come up with some pretend numbers. Here's an interesting thing. You cannot ask to see my brokerage statement, which I think is absurd, right? There is no way I would hire somebody like me without asking their financial statement, by the way. I think it's the least asked thing in the world. You know, people, I've seen an awful lot of people in the financial world that, believe me, their house is not painted. They've spent everything that they have and have not followed their own advice, and that stuff just kind of scares me. So I can't show you my statements. I can only give you the other part. But I will tell you, I never invest in anything that you don't invest in. I don't think it's ethically right, so I don't. My stuff's right there with yours. So I've got a Roth IRA. Barb's got a Roth IRA. We got a brokerage account. We got what's in a trust. And I got my 401k, those are in my checking account. Those are the four big buckets of money, all right? So Ken, if I was gonna pay off $60,000 worth of debt, would I wanna take it out of my Roth IRA?
Good question. It's all about the taxability of that money, right?
Well, then in the Roth, I can only put in a limited amount every year, and that's only because I know some rules
right.
to do a
backdoor
say
no.
Roth. I would not do it either, because it's tax-free money, it's gonna grow forever, and they only make so much of that. Can I use cash?
Of course.
Yeah, and there's no tax implication for it. So if I happen to have 60 grand sitting in a checkbook that I was willing to part ways with, I could do that. Can I use money out of my trust account?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah, because yours might be different the way it's set up. So my trust is just another ownership. It'd be like me writing a check out of the Financial Enhancement Group checkbook, right? It's all it is a way to own money so that I can avoid probate and control a little bit of stuff when I'm gone, all right? So yes, I can take it out of the trust. And here's where you get into that stock stuff, right? If I gift my daughter a stock that's appreciated and her income rate is low enough, then she doesn't have to pay taxes when she sells the stock to get the $60,000 to be able to pay the student loan. Where if I sold the stock, I would have to pay the taxes on it because of my tax rate. So most of your decisions, here's what I want you to get, guys. Most of your decisions that you're going to make involve the United States Tax Service. And you have to think about how this works. There is nothing that will separate you from your retirement like the Internal Revenue Service. And if you can just put all of this stuff together and understand it's not an investing decision by itself, it's not just a tax decision by itself, it is a combination. If you work with good quality people, you'll have better solutions. YourLifeAfterWork.com. Ken and I'll take a break. We'll be right back. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dilger.
Happy to have you along. All right, Ken, here's your test.
Uh-oh.
Right? Well, this is what, you know, I ask people, and I generally want to know, genuinely, not just generally, I genuinely want to know how to make this show as useful for you as I possibly can. And when I say useful, that means that you're getting something out of it that you can apply to your financial journey now and later into the future that does provide value. Yes, we're registered investment advisors. We're money managers. I would invite you to make a phone call at 800-928-4001. Come in, get a second opinion. Let us look and see how your life is working now and things that we might suggest that could be a little bit different. But at the same time, for those of you who want to take care of your money on your own, that's your business. If you want a fiduciary, it's ours. But if you want to do it on your own, then I want these segments, these conversations to be meaningful. And what I was asked to do was to use the fifth conversation to kind of sum up, Ken, what you learned and what you now know. So going back to conversation number one, we talked about in the accumulation mode, the game of risk.
Correct.
Right? So here's the quiz. As a 21-year-old in accumulation, what type of insurance should I buy first? Disability or life?
Disability.
There you go.
That's easy, Joe. That's Come on.
Okay. All right. So in the accumulation phase, and this kind of goes to the second conversation, what are your two primary goals? So if your daughter came home from IU and looked at you and said, Daddy, I'm getting serious about my finances. What are my two financial objectives in accumulation?
No debt.
No. That'd be nice. Hopefully she's got no debt.
Of course.
All right. That's no debt's always good. Saving
money.
The right percentage of her income.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And building tax diversification.
Correct.
So not just putting all of the money. I mean, if you knew the number of people who I have, it's what I call the alls, right? I have people who come in here with $1 million and they're all in equity. Or they're all in CDs, or they're all in bonds, not a lot of diversification, all in mutual funds, right? I see it all of the time. I also see people who have all their money in a 403B or a 401K and no money on the outside. Or I see somebody that has no 401K, no IRAs, and it's all in a trust account that they inherited from Uncle Rich. Okay, so you want tax diversification is what you ought to tell her, money that's taxable, tax-free, and tax-deferred. You want to be able to use that and saving the right percentage of her income. The younger you are, the less percentage you have to save. You just have to commit to saving it forever. So if you and I were to start today, we need to be saving in close to 20% of our income every year to be able to have a retirement at age 65 that matches the standard of living to which we become accustomed, right? If we started when we were younger in school, you know, we could save 4 to 5% and be living a different life today than those that are having to save a lot. So conversation number three was getting to know your beneficiaries. So Ken, can I give my daughter $60,000 to pay off her student debt?
Only if she's married.
Only if she's married and if I'm married. Right. And if
I not it's $15,000.
I can give her $15,000 a year. Now, again, one of the things I try to stress in that conversation is this is really, at this stage of the game, an immaterial question. I can give her $11 million a year. I can give her $11 million over my lifetime, one time. That's not going to happen, for the record. But I could give her that if I wanted to. I just have to file a gift tax return. Okay? So the $60,000, the $15,000 that you give away, you don't have to file a gift tax return. She doesn't have to file, I got the money tax return. I could just give her the $60,000. Can I give her the $60,000 and have her pay me back as a loan?
Yes.
Absolutely. There is nothing wrong with intra-family loans. I believe you will see them used more frequently in the future. So your kid has got a car loan at 6% and you're earning 3% on a CD, right? There's nothing that says that you can't pay the car off and charge your son 3 or 4% interest. You're making more than what you were making before. Your son is paying less than what he was paying before, and everybody's happy but the bank, right? And again, you know, my job as a fiduciary is to make your life the best it can possibly be. There are some families, and you know who you are, that have no business loaning each other money. I mean, it does create bad blood. But especially when you've got money and you've got one child, where there can be no conflict, those are very, very obvious and interesting ways to go about. Then we went to our Facebook discussion, and I asked somebody said that 401ks were bad. You lose control of your money. You should never use them. You should buy life insurance or annuities. And I went haywire and answered it. That's the third. That was the fourth conversation. So if you want to go back and listen to it on the podcast, consider this program. That's where you will find it. So, Ken, is a 401k a thing, a tax code, or an investment?
It's a thing.
It's a tax code. It's a wrapper. The mechanism
well, isn't that a thing?
Technically. So I have a process that I use called the candy wrapper that I explain to people how their money works, right? So there's essentially three things you can invest in: stocks, bonds, and cash, okay? Stocks, bonds, and cash. Now, you can get really complex from there. You can add commodities and currency, right? But stocks, bonds, and cash are what's inside of your 401k investments, almost always, okay? My industry tends to put a wrapper around them. That's what I would call the thing, right? The wrapper, which tend to be mutual funds. Sometimes it's exchange-traded funds. But it's a grouping of those stocks, bonds, or cash. And then you may or may not have a box that goes around it on the outside. And that is an additional wrapper, and that's the tax wrapper. So that is the 401k, 403b, IRA, and they may or may not have Roth options. And the reason it's critical to differentiate that, there's a well-known financial talk host on the radio that I used to show my Purdue students, I mean, the danger of not understanding investing and talking about investing on the radio. And he says, mutual funds always outperform the S&P 500. You should always buy mutual funds, never the S&P 500. Well, number one, no, most of the time they don't. A mutual fund is a wrapper, an S&P 500 is index. The two aren't even apples to apples, right? So you have to be very careful with this. I've had people say, I don't want a Roth. Roths are risky. No, stocks, bonds, and cash, they're risky. Roth is merely a tax code. It's telling the IRS that this is how I want this money treated from a tax perspective. And it's why that tax diversification part becomes so important as we deal with your daughter, with your son, as I deal with my daughters and my son-in-law, making sure that we have all of this stuff set up so that people are in good order. As I said, my friends, if you want to get signed up for the critical tax decisions that will, notice that was not might, that will impact your retirement, merely go to the website, yourlifeafterwork.com, and get signed up. If you'd like to come in and get a second opinion on your stuff, we are fiduciaries and would be more than happy to have that conversation. 800-928-4001. While you're at the website, do not forget to get signed up for the Market Carver. That is our weekly newsletter, e-newsletter that we send out that updates you on what we think is most important in the economy right now. Have a great week.